Most venerable Bhikkhu Sangha, venerable nuns, and Dhamma friends, devotees of Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, I take it a great honor that so many learned bhikkhus are here. And I am asked to address about Vipassana, about the spread of Dhamma in the country of its origin. I was born in a very staunch, conservative, Sanatani Hindu family, brought up in that environment, where from the very childhood I was taught pay respect to Buddha. Buddha is great because he is incarnation of God Vishnu. But never go near Buddha's teaching. That is not good. Keep yourself away from Buddha's teaching. That was the conditioning of my mind. But I was very fortunate that at the age of 31, due to certain circumstances, I had to take a course of Vipassana with my teacher, Sayaji Ubakhin, in Yangon. Slight hesitation was there. This is Buddhism. I may not become a Buddhist. If I become a Buddhist, I might go to hell. This is what we were taught. Pay respect to Buddha, all right, but his teaching is not good for us. But when I met my teacher before taking the course, he asked me, "You are a leader of the Hindu community in this country. Tell me, in your religion, is there any objection to Shila, that is morality?" "What objection, sir?" "No religion worth its name will be against Shila. Every religion teaches Shila. I will teach you Shila." "But how can you practice Shila? How can you practice morality unless you have control over your mind, unless you have mastery over your mind? So I teach you to control your mind, and we call it samadhi. Any objection in your religion?" "Samadhi? I had been studying many scriptures of my tradition, and there I found so many rishis and munis. They left their household, went to the jungle, and had deep samadhis. I'm a householder. I can't practice samadhi. If somebody teaches me samadhi, what objection?" "No objection, sir. Look, by practicing samadhi, it is good. Your mind will become calm, quiet, tranquil, and also pure to a certain extent. But at the depth of the mind, there is a habit pattern which keeps on generating impurity. And unless that habit pattern is changed, you are not liberated. Your mind is not totally pure. So for that, we teach you panya. And in tradition in which I was born, it's called pragya." "Pragya, any objection?" "What objection?" I used to give long discourses to my Hindu friends on Gita and try to explain what sthit pragya is, sthit pragya shaka bhasha, who is sthit pragya, what are the quality of sthit pragya. But after giving such lectures, I used to feel very remorseful what I have talked. I don't have a trace of this quality. Sthit pragya means vita raga bhaya krodha sthita dhira mani uchyate. I got so much of raga, so much of bhaya, so much of ego, so much of anger. Why I talk these things? Again, people will press me. Goenka ji, give a talk on Gita. Every time I felt very bad, I was looking for a way how to come out of these impurities, mental impurities. And here somebody says, I will teach you panya, pragya, which will purify the totality of your mind. All the craving and aversion, illusion and delusion will go away by this technique. Nothing wrong. No objection. All right. We teach only Shila, Samadhi, Panya. And Buddha taught nothing but Shila, Samadhi, Panya. Come and give a trial. See, if you find this teaching helpful to you and helpful to others, then only accept it, otherwise not. Give a fair trial. I decided to give a fair trial. Understand with a strong determination that I am not going to convert myself to Buddhism. I won't become a Buddhist. I'll give a trial. Let me see. And as one day after the other, as I kept on practicing, I found the whole teaching so pure, so pure, so practical. The Shila was there, not only in Hindu religion, every religion worth the name teaches morality. They also teach control over the mind, have a disciplined mind. They also teach purify the mind, get it filled with positive feelings of love, compassion, goodwill, tolerance. This teaching is everywhere. But mere teaching does not help. How to practice it? As I was practicing, it became so clear to me. This is applied Gita. I had been talking about Gita, Gita, Gita. This is applied Gita. One becomes established in Panya. One gets control of the mind. One gets purification of the mind at the deepest level, at the root level. I found nothing to object so far as the technique is concerned. But still, because of the conditioning of the mind from the very childhood, there must be something wrong somewhere. Otherwise, such wise persons of our country like Shankaracharya and others, why they wiped off Buddha's teaching from our country? The teaching is so good. Certainly there must be something wrong. So I better read the scriptures, the words of Buddha. Till then, I had not read even one gatha of Buddha. A good friend of mine from India, Bhadant Ananda Kosaldayan, he used to come and stay at my house. He was helping me to spread Hindi literature in that country. We were friends on that field. But whenever he talked about Buddha's teaching, I never took much interest, so he understood. He stopped talking. But once he gave me one of the book which he had translated, Dhammapada. I kept it on my table for 3 years. I didn't open it even. This is Buddhism, not good for me. This is Buddhism, not good for me. After the 10-day course, I started reading it. Every gatha, as I read, I had a thrilling experience. So wonderful, so pure, pure nectar. Why people object? Why there is objection in my country about Buddha's teaching? All right, let me read some more scriptures of Buddha, one after the other, one after the other. Nowhere I found any sentence or any word which is not pure Dhamma. Then I started understanding there must be something wrong. There must be something wrong. I went through the scriptures of my tradition, earlier tradition, went through Buddha's words, and the opportunity came. I went through the Jain scriptures also when I came to India to make a study as to why all this happened. And it was so clear. very unfortunately, last 1,500 years, such wrong propaganda was made. We are not here to condemn others, but the fact is, such wrong propaganda was made against Buddha and his teaching, which conditioned the mind, not only my mind, millions of people in India have that conditioning. The first thing, that Buddha was incarnation of Vishnu, the God Almighty. To study that, I went through Vishnu Puran, and there I found, yes, Vishnu says, I will take incarnation, my incarnation as Buddha. I will get birth as Buddha. But he says, all the bad qualities that I have, all the illusions, delusions, maya, moha, that will come to the world as Buddha to misguide people so that they don't go to heaven. I was amazed. What kind of scripture? How can one be a God Almighty to come to the world to mislead people to go to hell instead of heaven? It became clearer and clearer. This was the wrong propaganda which started a lot of controversy between these two traditions. So many things I found. I never quarreled with anybody. All are my friends, whether they are Hindus or Jains or Sikhs or Muslims or Christians, makes no difference for me. Human being is human being. But very humbly and very politely I placed before them, look, this belief that you have, what is the source of this belief? Is it not totally wrong? Is it not totally wrong? And they start accepting. Today, out of 5 Shankaracharyas, 4 have made an agreement with me that in future they will never say that Buddha was incarnation of Vishnu. They will never say that. And another 25 or 30 of leading sannyasis, Mahamandaleshwars and all, they signed that agreement. And others are also going to sign, and it will be just spread in the whole country. That don't talk something which is false. How can there be a God who will take birth as Maya and Moha, illusion and delusion, to mislead people? And people are now understanding. Yes, you are correct. Yes, you are correct. Another wrong propaganda that started. Buddha's teaching is nothing new. Buddha had nothing new to teach. Whatever was there in our tradition, he just took them. And minor change here and there. Otherwise, everything is taken from our tradition, our scriptures. I was also under the same impression. But then it became so clear. The contribution of Buddha is so great. And when I placed that before them, I asked them, come to a course of 10 days. And leading Hindu leaders, sannyasis, the head of the Hindu organizations, they came to the courses. Leading Jains come to the courses. And then they realize, yes, whatever you are saying is correct. And the second part of the agreement was, we will never say that Buddhism is a branch of Hinduism. They agreed. And then in the whole country I found how a large number of people are suppressed as untouchables. And generation after generation, they have to remain untouchable. And the logic is that they had done something wrong in the past, and that is why they take birth as untouchable. All right. Even if you agree that, everyone has got the capability to rise to the highest level. Why they should remain untouchable for the whole life? And how generation after generation they must remain untouchable? One is high or low according to the karma according to the actions, not according to the birth. One gets birth from the womb of this mother or that mother. And if one performs very unwholesome action, this person is the lowest. And if he performs wholesome action, is the highest. I was able to convince, and this third part also was a part of the agreement. If we keep on quarreling with people, we can't bring them to the right path. Buddha's words are so clear. Vivadam bhayato dasva, avivadam cha khemato. Vivad, merely arguments, will not take you anywhere. It is harmful, fearful. Instead of quarreling with the people, the Buddha's policy was, people used to come and discuss on so many philosophical matters. He will say, look, leave aside those subjects where we differ. Let us talk about subjects where we don't differ, where we are of the same opinion. Shila, Samadhi, Panya, we are of the same opinion. All right, now practice it. The body is anicca, dukkha, anatta. The body is not I, not mine. It is constantly changing. Any attachment to it will give you misery. The mind is also not I, not me, not mine, not my soul. It keeps on changing. Any attachment to it will bring misery. You also believe. I also believe. Now practice. And when they practice, all the confusion goes away. This is the best way. Ask people to practice. Unless I had practiced, any amount of discussions or arguments would not have changed me. Everyone has so attachment, so much of attached to their traditional belief, their dogma. They won't try to understand what is the truth. But when they come to courses, they start changing. They start accepting. It was so clear to me, and now so clear to large number of intellectuals who are coming to the courses, whether they are Jains or they are Hindus or they are Sikhs, or even if they are Muslims or Christians, makes no difference. The great contribution of Buddha. I say he was a super scientist of the spiritual field. He discovered certain things which the world did not know at all, which no other tradition of the past knew about it. Now, fortunately, we have got all the scriptures, all the Hindu scriptures, all the Vedas, the Upanishad, the Puranas, everything is in the CD now. The Jain scriptures are there, and entire Pali literature, the Tipitaka, the Attakatha, the Tika, the Anutika, all in the CD. And there is so easy facility to make research. I noticed, which everybody notices now, there was a teaching in India before Buddha that don't react to the objects, sensual objects. When your eyes come in contact with a shape, a form, a color, a light, ear comes in contact with the sound, nose comes in contact with the smell, tongue comes in contact with the taste, body comes in contact with something tangible, the mind comes in contact with some thought or emotion, don't react. Don't say this is good and that's why I react with craving. Don't say it is bad, so I react with aversion. Don't react, this is harmful. Raga and dvesha, both are harmful. This teaching was there. And yet, there was a great contribution of Buddha. When he said, you are not reacting to the outside objects. You are not reacting to the sensual objects outside. It appears to be so. This is only apparent truth, not the real truth. Then what you are reacting to? And he made it so clear. Sarayatan pachaya phasa. Six sense doors comes in contact with six sense object. There's a phasa, there's a contact. Phasa pachaya vedana. Then there's a sensation in the body. And vedana pachaya tanha. You react with craving or aversion to these body sensations. Never known to anybody. in the world, never known to anybody. So much importance he gave to these body sensations. You are reacting to the body sensations. At the apparent level it looks, yes, I am reacting to these outside objects. Outside object, when they come in contact to your sense door, there is a sensation in the body. The sensation will be pleasant if you give the valuation of the object as good. Sensation will be unpleasant when you give valuation as bad. And after that only you start reacting. If the sensation is pleasant, you react with craving, lobha. If the sensation is unpleasant, you react with dosha, aversion, raga, dosha, raga, dosha. And he said that is going on deep at the root level of your mind. When he talked about dukkha, the first noble truth, according to my tradition also, what was new? Yes. Jati, jara, vyadhi, marnang, all are dukkha. You take birth, you become old, you become diseased, you die, all are dukkha. Apyehi sambhayogo dukkho, apyehi vipayogo dukkho. You get associated with undesirables, you get disassociated with desirables. You can understand, everybody understands. What speciality of Buddha? You don't get whatever you desire and you become miserable. What speciality? Even before Buddha, everybody could understand that. Again, Buddha's speciality. All these understanding of dukkha is at a very surface level. Vikhitta chittena, the mind is scattered and can understand all that. And he wants us to go sankhittena. Sankhittena. When you have concentrated mind, one-pointed concentrated mind, that is sankhittena. Sankhittena pancha upadan khanda dukkha. The real dukkha is where these five aggregates of mind and one aggregate of body, when they are joined together and you identify yourself with that and you start reacting to that, there the misery starts. By practice of vipassana, it becomes so clear. We are reacting because of the contact of mind and matter, which brings sensation in the body, pleasant or unpleasant, and we keep on generating craving, aversion, a great discovery by this enlightened person, a great contribution to the humanity. You remain in ignorance. What is happening deep inside, you don't know at all. At the intellectual level, you keep on saying, we should not have craving, we should not have aversion. All right, you try also not to generate craving, not to generate aversion. But only at the intellectual level, what's happening deep inside, what you called anusaya, at the depth of the mind, constantly, day and night, when you practice vipassana, you will notice day and night, 24 hours, whether you are awakened or asleep, sitting or standing, walking or lying, eating or drinking, in every position, in every posture, there is some sensation or the other going on throughout the body. The contact is going on between mind and matter. Or some outside object on the sense too. Sensation is there. And every time there is a sensation, this part of the mind keeps on reacting. A pleasant sensation, lobha. Unpleasant sensation, aversion. Continuously, this habit pattern has become so strong. One may keep on purifying the mind at the surface level. So what? The mind becomes very pure. But time and again, some volcanic eruption, and again one is the same as before. Unless you work at the root level, and that is why he said, if you have a poisonous tree in your compound, poisonous, very dangerous, you cut it off. Good, you cut it off. But the roots are still there. You are not liberated. Another will sprout. More will sprout out of that. So work at the root level. Work at the root level. And he gave this wonderful technique, how to work at the root level. He gave so much importance to these body sensations when he said, nothing arises in the mind. Again, a great discovery of this enlightened person. Nothing can arise in the mind without a sensation on the body. Nothing can arise. Sabbe dhamma vedana samosarana. Everything that arises in the mind is dhamma. It always arises with the sensation on the body. And if you miss the sensation on the body and keep on rectifying ourselves only at the intellectual level, it is good, better than those people who don't work at all, even the surface level, much better. But still, the habit pattern of craving, aversion is there. How can you come out of it? People start realizing it. So much importance he gave to these body sensations. Ultimately, he says, with these body sensations, sukha vedana or dukha vedana, this takes you to Nibbana, to the full samapatti. In the Pathan, he says that. So much importance was given. And what to talk of other traditions. Even the tradition of Buddha has lost large number of people, we find. They stopped giving importance to the body sensation, which is so important so far as Buddha is concerned. People come to the courses, they say, I am addict to alcohol. I want to come out of it. And I have heard that Vipassana helps people to come out of addiction. Please help me. I'll join your 10-day course. I say, first understand, you are not addicted to alcohol. This is a wrong impression that you are addicted to alcohol. It is the apparent truth. It appears to be so. It seems to be so. Not the actual truth. Actually, you are addicted to the body sensation. When you take alcohol, you feel a particular sensation in the body. And at the depth of your mind, you start liking it. And you again crave, you want it more. You want the sensation again. You want the sensation again, you start taking more alcohol, more and more alcohol. Buddha gave this wonderful technique. Observe your sensations. Train your mind to become so sensitive that it can experience different kinds of sensations in the body. One part of it. And then remain equanimous. Keep on understanding every sensation, however gross it may be, however unpleasant it may be, it arises, seems to stay for some time, but ultimately passes away, is not eternal. When you come across very pleasant sensations, which are mere vibrations, a flow of very subtle vibration, same characteristic, rising, passing, now with great rapidity. Something which is so ephemeral keeps on changing. What's the sense of reacting to it with craving or the aversion? One starts realizing by experience. Merely trying to understand and trying to correct oneself at the intellectual level cannot help. And we find not one, not two, thousands of people addicted to alcohol, some addicted to tobacco, some addicted to this drug. How they come? Uneasily pass away. I say you are addicted not only to these intoxicants. You are also addicted to all the defilements of the mind. You are addicted to your anger. You are addicted to your passion. You are addicted to your ego. You are addicted to your fear. All the impurities, you are addicted. You are addicted. That becomes so clear. Again, the words of Buddha made me understand so clearly. And this is how people who come to the courses, they understand so clearly. This is a pure science of mind and matter. A super scientist realized certain truths which people didn't know. And that truth, he helped people to come out of the misery. Come out of the misery. No magic, no miracle. It's understanding at the actual level, at the experiential level, and helping oneself to come out of the misery. Go to the depth where you can feel sensations. So the courses that are given, 3 days, one has to work to sharpen the mind. And for sharpen the mind, sankhittena again, one-pointedness, below the nostrils, above the upper lip, one-pointedness. You keep your attention there, keep on observing the breath as it is, not as you would like it to be. Don't make it a breathing exercise. Don't make it pranayama. No verbalization, no visualization, the breath as it is. If it is deep, it is deep. If it is shallow, it is shallow. Passing through left nostril, right nostril, just observe, do nothing. Just observe. Mind wanders and you bring it back. Mind wanders, you bring it back. Within 3 days, continuous working, within 3 days, mind becomes so sharp, starts feeling subtler realities. The whole technique is to realize the realities pertaining to this mind-matter phenomenon. Certain realities which one has never experienced before. Sensations in this area. Gross sensations like pain, heaviness, numbness, heat, people can understand. Even vikhetena chettena, you can feel. Sankhetena chettena. When the mind becomes very sharp, then you feel all kinds of sensations. From the fourth day onwards, you start feeling sensations throughout the body, from the top of the head to the tips of the toes, throughout the body. Sensation, sensation. Initially, you come across very gross, solidified, intensified sensations, unpleasant sensation. But the teaching is such, you just observe, do nothing, don't react. Just observe, understand its nature, arising, passing, anicca, anicca, anicca. And the moment you react to it, dukkha, dukkha. And you say, it's I, it is mine, then you react, dukkha, dukkha. This by experience, not a philosophy. To me, as I understood Buddha, Buddha was not interested in any philosophy. Whenever people asked him, sir, what is your philosophy? I am above philosophies. Yes, he went above philosophies. Philosophies are only intellectual games or emotional games. They have got nothing to do with the Buddha's teaching. Buddha's teaching is actuality. You have to experience truth. Unless you experience it, it will again become an intellectual game. It won't help you. So experience it. And by experience you understand. Initially you come across very gross sensations. You keep on observing. Old habit pattern was to react, but you change your habit, working, mind becomes so sharp, entire solidity goes away. At the apparent level it is true, the body is solid, but the actual level, again a great discovery of this person, wonderful person, 26 centuries back, without this modern scientific apparatuses or instruments, he came to the truth. The entire material world, the material body, is made of tiny little kalapas, what you call atom now. Tiny little kalapas, invisible. And this kalapa is not solid. Constantly changing, arising, passing. Mere wavelets, sabbu, loko, pakampito. Not only own body, but entire universe. Sabbu, loko, pajjalito, sabbu, loko, pakampito. A great discovery by this enlightened person. 26 centuries back. With his insight, he realized that it was not an intellectual game, and any Vipassana meditator can realize that. He gave a path. The whole body, solidity goes away. Mere vibration. The entire physical structure, mere vibration. The mental structure, the mental contents, they also initially come solidified. Emotion comes, anger comes, all solidified. You keep on observing. Divided, dissected, disintegrated, dissolved. So initially Uday, Vyay, Samuday, Dhamma, Anupasya, Viharati, Vay, Dhamma, Anupasya, Viharati. Then you reach the stage, Samuday, Vay, Dhamma, Anupasya, Viharati. As it arises, so it passes away. That is the important station on the path of liberation. Bhanga, dissolved. When everything gets dissolved, then your journey of purification, then your journey of understanding the Dhamma properly begins. Not at the intellectual level, at the experiential level. People come to the courses. Before coming to the courses, they keep on arguing so much. What? Buddha had nothing to teach after he took from our tradition. All right, Baba, you say it took from your tradition. But come, I also have the same view. When I came there and I practiced, and I kept on practicing, I found so much new which the world didn't know. The entire human world didn't know about these things, which he realized at that time. And that was not to pacify the curiosity, not to quench the thirst of curiosity. What is this body and how it is made and what is this mind and what are the mental... Nothing doing. It is just to find out where the misery lies, the source of misery, how one becomes miserable and how one comes out of misery. This wonderful discovery of giving importance to body sensation, a great discovery. Because of the body sensation, misery starts, keeps on multiplying. And because of body sensation, one starts getting liberated. It's a junction where two paths are there. Either you are walking on the path where you keep on multiplying your misery, or you are walking on the path where you are coming out of misery. If you are not aware what is happening, at the depth of the mind, sensations are there. and you keep on reacting with craving, aversion, craving, aversion. Misery, misery, you keep on multiplying your misery. You are strengthening your habit pattern of craving, aversion, and by the same sensation, now you are aware of the sensation, but you don't react. This is anicca, changing, you don't react. You are coming out of misery. You are changing your habit pattern. A wonderful physician, Mahabhishaka, people are miserable. And he gave a way how to come out of misery. People come and discuss, as I used to discuss before I came to the path. Oh, Buddha is nastic, he doesn't believe in soul, he doesn't believe in God. I say it is so irrelevant. You are a sick person, you go to a doctor, doctor examines you and says, well, look, this is your sickness and here is the medicine. He writes a chit, this is medicine, use this medicine, you will be out of sickness. You don't ask this doctor, do you believe in soul? Do you believe in God? We never ask. I am sick, somebody gives me medicine and it cures me. I go to the chemist shop, I buy that medicine, I don't ask the chemist, do you believe in God? Do you believe in soul? Otherwise, I don't take this medicine. Madness, he says, I am a bhishakka. I am a physician, I am a surgeon. You are miserable. Look, I have got a way to help you to come out of the misery. All other things are irrelevant, totally irrelevant. And we keep on quarreling on that. And when we made study where this word nastic started, at the time of Buddha, this word did not carry this meaning. Totally not. At that time, even Buddha says to some people, oh, he is a nastic. Nastic did not mean that one does not believe in soul or God. In those days, 26 centuries back, and even few centuries later on also, nastic was called a person who does not believe in the truth of the law of action and the result according to action, karma and karma phal. One who does not believe in that is an astic. One who believes in this is an astic. This was the understanding of this word. Not only amongst the Buddhist literature. I find the same thing in the Jain literature. I find the same thing in the Hindu literature. We are when making study. I don't know when it started later on because of quarreling, finding some fault somewhere and give some bad name to somebody and then keep on repeating it. I felt so sorry and I keep on telling my brethren, whether they are Hindus or Jains or not, look what we have been doing all these days. Understand, are you not miserable? Are you not miserable? Deep inside there is so much misery. As Buddha said, they are burning charcoals at the depth of the mind. And over that, this thick layer of ash, basma channo vakpavako, burning charcoal, and you are happy with this layer of ash over it. See how much burning is there. It becomes clearer and clearer by experience. As one keeps on understanding Buddha's teaching at the experiential level, one automatically starts living a moral life. Because as Buddha said, you can't harm anybody by any vocal or physical action, unwholesome vocal or physical action, you can't harm anybody without first harming yourself. Pubbe hanati attanang paccha hanati sopare. First you kill yourself, first you kill the peace and harmony of yourself, and then only you kill the peace and harmony of others. Words of Buddha are so clear, the words of a scientist. This is truth, he only discovered, he didn't create it. How can you perform an unwholesome action? You cannot perform unless you generate some defilement or the other in the mind. You kill somebody, how can you kill somebody? You have to generate anger, hatred, ill will, animosity, then you kill somebody. And if you learn vipassana, start observing the sensation, you find the moment I have generated anger, hatred, I am the first victim of my negativity. This burning sensation in the whole body, palpitation increases, tension gets built up, so much of misery. I am harming myself. Before I harm others, I have started harming myself. I steal something, tremendous amount of greed, and a good meditator who has gone to the depth of the mind with all the solidity gone, will that peace that one has experienced, one understand, I lost the peace of my mind. I lost the harmony of my mind. I lost the balance of my mind. Look, I started harming myself. Sexual misconduct. Unless you generate passion, lust, how can there be? And once you generate that and you are a good meditator, you start realizing. Any unwholesome action, vocal or physical, starts with the unwholesome impurity on the mind. And every unwholesome impurity in the mind makes you miserable. This was a great research of the scientist, and so wonderful research for the humanity, and now people are understanding it. If you keep on arguing only, you believe in this, I believe in that, my scripture says so, your scripture says so, we can't, we won't be successful. Now, of course, the question was, how India is accepting it? Certainly, I had my difficulty. As I had my own difficulty joining a course, when I started giving a course, my teacher had a great Dhamma volition that we got this invaluable jewel from India. And I want to pay back this debt of gratitude to India. India is today bankrupt. It has lost Vipassana and so miserable. If they get this wonderful technique, they will come out of their misery. All this bloodshed, all this fighting between this caste and that caste, this community and that community, this religion, that religion, will all get washed away. If Vipassana goes there, he has so much compassion. And he said he wanted to come, but he could not come due to certain reasons. So when I came, he said, you are representing me. On my behalf, take this wonderful Dhamma back to the country of origin. And of course, there is a strong belief that 2500 after Buddha, second Sasana will arise, and the Dhamma will go back to the country of origin. There are many people who will be having good paramis of the past. They will accept it willingly, and then it will go to the other parts of the world. I was wondering, even if it is so, a person like me, who had been a businessman all my life, how can I teach? And how people will come to me? I am a householder. If I am a monk in robes, then people may come just to get my blessing, perhaps. Otherwise, who will come to me? And to stay with me for 10 days, who will manage? Who will manage the courses? Who will manage the expenses? But within 14 days, the first course was arranged. How Dhamma works. And after that, courses after courses, courses after courses. When people start realizing this is the truth, this is the truth, they start accepting it. And they get so much benefit as I got benefit. In one course itself, I was suffering from such a great migraine headache. There was no cure. Doctors used to give me morphine injection, and they told I might become morphine addict. But there was no cure. Around the world, I went to different countries, best doctors. They could not take me out of morphine. 10 days, morphine was gone. Migraine was gone. And that was immaterial later on. Such an ego-centered person, such a self-centered person, such a hot-headed person, so much of anger. How that started diminishing, totally changed life. What a great benefit I got from this. Like this, when people also start getting the same benefit, they start accepting it. If you simply start arguing, your belief is wrong and my belief is right, there is no end to this argument. Viva dang bhayato disva. Never argue, just make them understand by practice. Come and practice. There is no religion today whose followers are not attending Vipassana, 10-day Vipassana courses. No religion. And not only ordinary people of different religions, their leaders are coming to the courses. Large number of Christian priests and nuns, more than 2,000, have come to the courses, and every year they are keep coming. They say this is what our religion also teaches, but we don't have any practice. And you got a practice by which we can get the same result as we are taught in our religion. Muslim leaders are coming. Hindu sannyasis are coming. Of course, Buddhist monks and nuns bound to come. But others also, Jain monks are coming, who were troubled with, at the time of Buddha also. But more than 500 Jain monks and nuns have come, and they keep coming. This is ours. This is our. The first Christian group who came, three of them, missionaries, first group. At the end of the course, a very elderly mother superior, she stands up and says, Goenka, you are teaching Christianity in the name of Buddha. I am teaching Dhamma. Dhamma is for everybody. Whether this religion or that religion, every religion wants you to live a moral life. Every religion wants to have a disciplined life. Every religion wants to have a pure life full of love, compassion, goodwill. And this is what Buddha's teaching is for. And you get the result. It is not merely an intellectual game, not an emotional game or devotional game. actual practice, a scientific way of coming out of your misery, coming out of your defilements, your bad habit of generating defilements, and start living a better life, better life. Such hard criminals. When I was there, the second year or third year, I went and gave a course at the center of Mahatma Gandhi in Sevagram. Some very elderly people, companions of Mahatma Gandhi, participated, and they were so pleased. This is wonderful. It gives result. It is so good. Why not you meet Vinoba Bhave, who is a disciple of Mahatma Gandhi? I went there, met him. When I discussed about Vipassana, he says, no, impossible. How can there be a technique to purify the mind? It can only be by grace it happens, not by any technique. I said, sir, it has happened with me and it's happened to thousands of people. No, I can't believe. Then he gave a challenge. If a change comes in the hard criminals in the jail, then only I will accept the efficacy of this technique. I said, I'm new to the country. I have come from another country. Please arrange a course. I will give a course. He tried, but he was not successful. 4 or 5 years later, a home secretary of the Rajasthan government, he participated. He said, wonderful. This is so good. It is non-sectarian. Our government is secular government, cannot give favor to this religion or that religion. This is no religion. This is a way of life. And this should be acceptable to the whole country. Then I told him, well, you are home secretary, and I got a challenge that hard criminals should change this by this, otherwise Vinobaji would not accept, and Vinobaji by that time had gone. So he arranged the course, first course in Jaipur. Wonderful change came, wonderful results came. Second course, third course, and then it starts spreading. Thousands of people sit, and within 2-3 months or sometimes 1 or 2 years, such a big change comes in them. Terrorists have come to the course. What a big change has come in them. No magic, no miracle. When they start observing the truth within themselves, all the time, every thought that comes in, revenge, when I go out of jail, revenge, I will kill this fellow, I will kill that fellow. Then we say, all right, you observe what happens. When you have this feeling of revenge, what kind of sensation? And they observe, burning sensation, tension, palpitation, oh, misery. You are creating misery for yourself. You don't know when you will kill, or whether you will kill or not kill, you are starting killing yourself. It becomes so clear. They start changing. Everybody wants to live a happy life. Who wants to live a miserable life? Out of ignorance, avidya. Because of avidya, one does not know that vedana pachaya tanha. One does not know there is a vedana and you are reacting to that vedana. Misery, misery, misery. When they start coming to that, they start understanding it. And we keep on saying that I am not here to convert people from one organized religion to another organized religion. Of course, conversion is involved. We convert people from misery to happiness. We convert people from ignorance to enlightenment. We convert people from cruelty to compassion. And that is needed by everyone throughout the world. And that is why people are accepting. People from different communities are accepting. India has also started accepting. But still, such a large number of people are there who do not know even there is such a technique like Vipassana. A great tragedy. People do not know even. Coming to the course is far away. So that is why, and we don't have a kind of publicity where we go, come, I will help you in this way or that way. That is not our way of working. So now a decision is made that we will have a big pagoda where about 8,000 students, Vipassana students, can sit and meditate. Wonderful vibration when we find at our centers, bigger centers like Igatpuri, where about 800 people sit together and meditate. So good atmosphere because of so many people meditating together. Samagganang tapausukho, words of Buddha. Join together and meditate. It is so pleasant. So pleasant. And yes, it gives result. So if 8,000 or 10,000 people sit together, what wonderful result it will be. And not only that, it will give a message, not only the whole of India. Such a big structure, 325 feet high, hollow inside, just like Shodigun Pagoda of Burma. People will come just to see what is this. And when they come there, they'll get the message of Buddha. And all the wrong impression spread in the country about Buddha, there will be a gallery where animated exhibition will be given about Buddha's life, real Buddha's life, and what he taught, and how people got benefited by that. All that will be exhibited there. People will get that message. People will get attracted to Vipassana. Now, large number of people, the word Vipassana is lost in the country. To me, when I went in 1955 to my teacher, and he said, come Goenka, I will teach you a technique of your country, and we call it Vipassana. Vipassana? What Vipassana? I came back home, went to the Hindi dictionary, there was no such word as Vipassana. I went to the Sanskrit dictionary, no such word as Vipassana. The word is lost from the country, what to talk of the technique. So the country to know that there exists a technique which is so scientific, which is so rational, so pragmatic, so logical, and so result-oriented. No blind faith involved. You practice, you get benefit, you accept, otherwise not. And thousands upon thousands of people have taken courses. Not a single person has come and told us that I wasted my 10 days. Not a single person. People get benefit less or more according to the efforts that they make. But everyone gets some benefit or the other. This is how, Reverend Sir, this is how in India it is starting, but it's like a drop in the ocean. 1 billion people, and say a few lakhs of them have taken Vipassana, or say a few lakhs of them have also heard about Vipassana, is not sufficient. I am pleased that a beginning is made at least. So more and more information should go, and this will be a big thing for information, not only for people of India, from the world. Bombay has no monument for people to go and see there. The Bombay city, more than 1.5 crore population, and the commercial capital of India. Every day, few lakhs of people come and go from there, and they have got nothing to see. So this will be a monument there, not just for the sake of monument. People will come and see out of curiosity, and when they come there, they will get the benefit of knowing about Buddha, knowing about the teaching of Buddha, knowing about Vipassana, and many of them will come to the courses, and this is how it will spread. I am so sure it is bound to spread, not only in India, but throughout the world. The second Sasana of Buddha has started. The clock of Vipassana has struck. People are getting benefit. People from every country, from every community, from every tradition, of every belief, they come and they get the same benefit. So, Reverend Sir, I want the blessing of the Sangha. I am so grateful to the Sangha. If the Sangha had not preserved Pariyatti, if the Sangha had not preserved Patipatti, where could have I got it? Impossible. I feel so fortunate I was born in Burma, Myanmar. I was so fortunate I came in contact with this wonderful technique in Burma. Otherwise, my whole life would have been just making money, running after money, rat race of money, relentless rat race of money. Where was peace? Where was harmony? Where was real happiness? I got this. I am so fortunate. Therefore, I am so grateful to the Sangha. These 5 countries especially have maintained the Pariyatti and also Patipatti, and that is why we got it. And other places also. Whoever kept Pariyatti and Patipatti, Sangha is responsible for that. So I always pay respect to Sangha. I feel so very much grateful to them that because of them I got this wonderful technique. May Dhamma grow. Chirang Tithatu Saddhammo. Chirang Tithatu Saddhammo. All of you who have attended today's talk, most of you might have practiced Vipassana. If not, spare 10 days of your life. This is the best 10 days will be of your life. Spare 10 days, learn this technique for your good, for your benefit, and maybe through you, for the good and benefit of so many others. May all of you enjoy real peace, real harmony, real happiness. Bhavatu sarva mangalam. Bhavatu sarva mangalam. Bhavatu sarva mangalam.